Heart Foundation Press, the Hitman Heart Gym, the Anvil Neidhart. I don't think they think the Russo brothers are so fabulous. The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, in a steel cage match with the champion, the Macho Man, Randy Savage. He's standing by with Elizabeth.
Yeah, Ted DiBiase inside this 15-foot high steel cage. Your money can do you no good. Yeah, because you got a date with the Macho Man, Randy Savage, and if I'm not mad now, I'll never be mad. Yeah, because your smiling face is not going to be smiling any longer. Yeah, inside this cage, I am the one, and you got an answer to me. Oh, yeah, I'm going to get you all in one night, because there's no way out for you, man. You're not getting to the gator over the top. I am the cat, yeah. Have Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan and Virgil to help you either. Yeah, I'm gonna get ya! Elizabeth, be a witness, because the steel cage is gonna be the one that makes history, yeah! It's the one that puts Ted DiBiase out of the World Wrestling Federation. That's a promise!
A 15-foot high steel cage surrounding the ring, the Macho Man, Randy Savage, to defend the World Wrestling Federation Championship against the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. It is 1 week away at the Philadelphia Spectrum, Saturday, September 24th.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Greatness of Randy Savage. Kelly Nelson here, your guide through the 2018 Randy Savage Unreleased DVD that the WWE put out. And today we're going to have a bit of a longer episode, I think, because I want to finish off disc one, and we have three matches left. And considering the opponents that Savage has in these matches, I'm assuming these are all going to be around 10 minutes at least in length. Some could be shorter, but yeah, this will be a longer episode. And we'll finish off disc one. We're going to jump ahead about a year and a half almost from the last match we reviewed, because the first one we're reviewing today is from September 1988, and we left off in May 1987 last time. So a lot has changed. Macho turned babyface. He won the WWF World title at WrestleMania 4, and he is now in the middle of that reign. He also formed the Mega Powers with Hulk Hogan in the intervening time. So a lot has changed. So we're from the menu screen. Course chapters, and we're going to go all the way to the end, probably, to get to the first match. And here we are, September 24th, 1988, WWE Championship. Well, technically it was WWF, but whatever. Championship steel cage match. Macho Man Randy Savage versus the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. I'm interested to see where this one's coming from. I have an idea where it may be coming from, but I'm not 100% sure. Okay, let's do the countdown. 3, 2, 1, go. 3, 2, 1, go. Here we are. I believe this is the Spectrum? Although, no, it's... I don't think it is. Oh, actually, no, it must be, because the font... what gives it away is the font on the text font for Ted DiBiase. That's the... That was the style used for the shows from the Spectrum on the Prism Network. Let's see if we can hear the voice of Dick Graham, longtime play-by-play man. Yes, it is. It's indeed Dick Graham. So this is indeed the Philadelphia Spectrum. This would have been on the Prism Network, which televised shows, cards from the Philadelphia Spectrum beginning in 1979. And would go all the way to 1989. So a decade of shows televised from the Spectrum. This is September 1988. The last Prism WWF show was February 1989. So only a few months left As we can see, must have been a near sellout crowd. Although, no, if you look over on that side, there's empty seats, definitely. But, no, maybe, yeah, and it's pretty darkened. This may not have been a particularly high-drawing card. But the fans that are there are definitely rabid. Your Philly hardcore fans will always be rowdy and loud. And they definitely will show you who they love and they hate in the world of the WWF. So, Savage now, the top dog, at least as far as having the world title. I mean, Hogan was still the number one guy as far as the most popular. Okay, we're getting the match right from the get-go. As soon as Savage enters the cage, he's attacked. I'd be remiss to if I didn't mention that Elizabeth is once again looking extremely lovely. This had been a long feud at this point. It had already been blown off in Madison Square Garden, of course, because they always had the first run for the big programs. And this will be the blow-off in Philadelphia. The feud started basically at WrestleMania 4, because the main event of the tournament for the vacant title was these two men, Savage and DiBiase. And it carried the territory throughout the spring and summer and into the fall of 1988. And I think it drew quite well, at least the initial matches, the initial rematches. I'm trying to remember how many matches they did at the Garden, if it was two or three. It was at least two. I'm not sure how many matches they did at the Philadelphia Spectrum. And I've never seen this match before. I've seen the cage that they had between each other at Madison Square Garden from earlier in the year, but I've never seen the Philly cage. So that's what I want out of this DVD. I mean, I'm a huge wrestling fan, and I've seen, of course, tons of old footage, but I'm hoping that most of the matches are on this DVD are most of the ones that I haven't seen, and a lot are pretty obscure, and some are definitely ones that haven't seen the light of day before, I believe. So I should, there shouldn't be too many that I've seen before. I've seen a few that we've reviewed up till now before, but not very many. So DiBiase in total control. And the best thing about not seeing these matches before is it's totally fresh. And I don't know what's going to happen next. That's the best way to watch wrestling, I think. Watching something that is new to you, that's the most fun way to watch wrestling. The lighting, I guess, yeah, it's the typical Spectrum look. It had a distinct look, just like MSG, just like Maple Leaf Gardens, Boston Garden. That was still apparent at this time. It wouldn't be really into the 90s that the WWF look would become totally standardized and no arena would really stand out from the next. I mentioned this on a earlier episode where I really miss that. You know, I miss the distinct looks of the arenas. It's like baseball stadiums having, you know, their own unique look, like Fenway and Wrigley Field and Yankee Stadium, etc. So this is, of course, Escape the Cage rules, WWF style. Controversial to some. If you grew up as a WWF fan and haven't really branched out beyond the WWF and watched other promotions, this is normal, and you maybe don't really question too much the logic of the Escape the Cage rules. But this style of cage match, where to win the match you had to escape the cage, was unique to the WWF. I think it had first developed in the old Los Angeles territory. This is a story that I've read before. Meltzer's wrote about it before, where the first promotion to use the Escape the Cage rules was the LA territory, because they had booked a match between the Sheik and Freddie Blassie, who are both basically heels. Well, Freddie Blassie was slowly turning babyface at the time. But anyway, the Sheik didn't want to do a pinfall loss because he was loath to do any jobs of any kind. So they came up with the rule that to win the cage match, you had to escape the cage. And then it eventually ended up being used in the old WWWF. And they didn't have their first cage matches, I think, until the mid-70s. Well, no, that's not true. The first cage match at Madison Square Garden wasn't until 1975, but they definitely had cage matches in other cities prior to that. I know, of course, there's footage out there of a match between Bruno Sammartino, a cage match between Bruno Sammartino and George the Animal Steel from Philadelphia in 1970. That's a cage match. I think that match, that was 1970, I think that match used Escape the Cage rules. And I'm not sure why the WWWF went with those rules, other than I think the idea was it made Bruno look super strong when he just kicked the crap out of a heel and then finally just walked out of the cage when he was finally content that he had inflicted enough damage on his opponent and was done with him. And so he could triumphantly walk out the door. Virgil getting heavily involved in this match, as he did in the Madison Square Garden version of this cage match. But I don't think we're going to see a young fan run out from the crowd and try and attack Virgil, scaling the cage and trying to attack him, as you see, or as happened in the Madison Square Garden version of this match. If you haven't saw that before, I would recommend checking it out. Maybe on YouTube, or maybe just the footage of that is on YouTube. It's quite funny to see a fan actually get onto the cage and start climbing it to get at Virgil. And it was a very young kid, just I think not even a teenager maybe, or around 12, 13 years old. It's hilarious. So I don't think we're going to see a repeat of that here, although you never know what could happen with a Philadelphia wrestling crowd. Double clotheslines, both men down. So back to my point about cage matches and the sort of the history of the different rules. The WWF went with that style, the Escape the Cage rules, which I mentioned had been first used, I believe, in the LA territory in around 1969. But for whatever reason, no other territories embraced the Escape the Cage rules. They would always have a referee in, like a normal match, except that, of course, you're in a cage and you can do whatever you want, no holds barred, basically. So it has its pros and cons, the Escape the Cage rules. The main con, I guess we'll start with that, is that it makes sense for the heel to want to escape the cage because he's cowardly and doesn't want to be in there in the first place. But it doesn't really make sense for the babyface to escape the cage, want to escape the cage, because he's kind of, you know, he's valiant, he's a hero, he wants to gain a measure of revenge. He's not going to be running away from the heel. And it depends on the workers, it depends on who booked the match. Some are done really well, like I mentioned about the Bruno ones from the 70s. It made sense that Bruno wouldn't attempt to escape the cage once the whole match until the very end, when he was finally satisfied that his opponent was a bloody mess and was done for and, you know, he'd won, essentially. Then he would just calmly walk out the door and win. So that made sense. You know, Bruno wasn't trying to escape from the cage within the first minutes of the match. And this one, we didn't see too many attempts at escapes by Savage until just a few minutes ago. which is fine, basically. Savage, these guys have been going at it for a while now, and it makes sense that Savage has maybe had enough. Not that he's running from DiBiase, but he's, you know, you gotta try and win the match eventually. But there's some cage matches over the years where it's not booked very logically, or the psychology's not very sound, where the babyface is attempting to escape from the cage within the first couple of minutes of the match. I'm thinking of one from the WWE unreleased DVD that I mentioned on an earlier episode that preceded this Savage DVD, where there's a cage match between Diesel and Yokozuna when Diesel was the world champion. And if I recall correctly, Diesel's like trying to scale out of the cage within the first couple minutes of the match, and that the psychology of that didn't really work for me. But there's a lot of these escape the cage matches that have been done very well over the years. Of course, Hogan and Orndorff, Hogan and Big Boss Man, Bret Hart versus Owen Hart, etc. So really, for me personally, I would prefer the referee being in there and not having escape the cage rules. Just have a fight to the finish, basically a fight to the death almost. But I mean, the drama of trying to escape can be done really well. And I don't have a huge problem with the escape the cage rules. But the fan of logic in me, the fan of psychology in me, prefers a referee being in there. What I really dislike is what they do often in the WWE now is that they have a referee in the ring, plus a referee who can count pinfalls and submissions, but also at the same time they still have the escape the cage rules. And I feel it's like, do one or the other. Either have just the escape the cage rules with no ref, or have the ref in counting pinfalls and submissions but with no escapes. Don't do both, because what's the point? But anyway. So this has been a pretty good match. Savage attempted to get out through the door a few times, and Virgil, of course, has been preventing his escape numerous times. And I guess he did. Virgil was preventing Savage escapes early, too. So I'll take back what I said. Savage did try to escape the cage relatively early in the match. You can feel it. This one's coming to a climax pretty quickly. This is a typical end of the cage match spot where... But Virgil, jeez. This is really good healing by Virgil, because I hate him for doing this. What an asshole. And the fans would have just despised him too at this time. We're going to get a double noggin knockers, and that's going to be your finish. A huge pop from the crowd. Look at the fans. They're just totally rabid right now. Wow. What a pop. Really well done finish. And as far as Escape the Cage WWF matches go, that was pretty good. Savage and DiBiase had pretty good chemistry with each other. Actually, some of DiBiase's best WWF matches would be these ones he had in 1988 with Savage for the world title. No blood, that's one knock. By this time, 1988 WWF, you didn't see much blood, if at all. It was very rarely used up until about 1997 even, when you had the Bret Hart-Steve Austin match at WrestleMania 13 with a ton of juice, and then it started to become common again with the Attitude Era unfolding. But between 87 and 97, there was really blood in matches in the WWF was quite rare. Maybe there was even a We Want Blood chant from the crazed Philly fans at some point and I didn't hear it. They were definitely known to chant that over the years. Lord Allen, color commentary. I didn't mention that before. Boom. Pretty big bump by Virgil going down from the top of the cage to the outside. But also the bump by DiBiase was no day at the beach either. Wow, just look at that reaction. Savage was just so beloved at this point. Like I mentioned on an earlier episode, Savage is my favorite wrestler at this time. Okay, now we're going to October 7th, 1988. This, I believe, is from Europe. Yes. This may even be from France? This could be Paris. Yes, it is. I could hear the commentary, and Heenan just mentioned Paris. This was one of the first, if not the first, WWF tours of Europe. They went to France, they went to Italy. I don't know if they did England at this moment. I know they do England in 1989 in London and probably some other cities. There's footage of that. But this is from Paris. You can see the ads on the side of the ring. I think the one is for probably a Paris newspaper. And then the other one is the TV channel, I believe Canal Plus, which was a pay subscription channel. So you have Akeem, the African Dream, and with it's interesting they have women holding up the names of the wrestlers, because I guess they thought that maybe the fans weren't totally familiar with them, although I'm sure if you went to a WWF show, most of them would have been familiar and watching the show on TV. It's an interesting, unique French touch for Elizabeth. These last few matches, she's been just pawed at coming down to the ring by the fans. Pretty big ovation for Savage. I could see Nick Bockwinkel. There he is in the salmon sort of pink-colored blazer at ringside. He was an agent, former AWA world champion. Nick Bockwinkel, an agent with the WWF at this point. So Akeem and Monsoon and Heenan on commentary are talking about this right now. Akeem was not led to the ring by his manager, Slick, for whatever reason. This is a unique matchup. I don't know if they ran this too often in 1988, Savage versus Akeem. This is a rematch of sorts from the WrestleMania 4 title tournament, where you had in the semifinals Savage against the One Man Gang, who is, of course, the same man as Akeem. In the summer of 1988, there'd be a gimmick change where the One Man Gang became Akeem. And Akeem's awesome. One Man Gang is awesome. But Akeem's really awesome, just the way he fully embraced this utterly bizarre gimmick, where he's supposed to have been transformed into a African man, at least in his mind. There was like some weird ceremony. In the summer of 88, they played this on WWF TV, where Slick took Akeem to some ceremony. I guess presumably it was in Africa, and out of the smoke emerged Akeem, the African Dream, for the first time. And of course, the name is the African Dream part is a rib on Dusty Rhodes being the American Dream. And at this time, and for several years previously, Dusty Rhodes was, of course, the booker for the WWF's main competition, Jim Crockett Promotions, the NWA, the Carolinas, whatever you want to call it. And so they would mock Dusty every once in a while with ribs like this. I mean, Virgil, Ted DiBiase's bodyguard, that's also a rib on Dusty Rhodes, because Dusty's real name is Virgil Runnels. I like the Savage versus Big Man dynamics. I in general just like that, you know, the hero versus the monster heel dynamic in all forms, different wrestlers over the years. Wow, Savage going up top for a cross body early on and getting a near fall. Good stuff. Keem cuts him off. I think it was on, I'm pretty sure it was on this European tour where there's a match where Keem is tag teaming with Harley Race, King Harley Race, for some reason. And they come down to the ring at the same time to Akeem's music, which was Jive Soul Bro, sung by Slick, Akeem's manager. And Harley Race totally embraces his role and the fact that he's coming down to this music by dancing like Akeem. And it's quite funny to see Harley Race show that side of himself, that side of his personality. He wasn't known for doing like a strange gimmick like that or a dancing gimmick like that. So if you can find footage of that, it's out there. I believe it was maybe even from Rome. Akeem drawing the ire of the French fans with their whistles, which is like the European equivalent to booing. On commentary, Heenan, of course, is making fun of the French, as you would expect. Not, I don't know. Akeem on top here, this isn't particularly interesting. Akeem during this run, his best work was in the Twin Towers tag team with the Big Boss Man that had just probably started around this time and would, they'd team quite a bit going into 1989. But yeah, this is another match, yet another match I've never seen before. I've seen bits and pieces of these early European shows, but I've never seen this match. Keem going for the big suplex here. All right. Monsoon said he was setting him up for his patented move, which was the, I think it was called the 747, where he would, it would be a suplex, but a suplex falling frontwards instead of backwards. I guess he still used that as a game. I can't even remember if he changed his finishing move at all, but that was his finisher as the one-man gang, that's for sure. Bear hug. Pretty dull. Savage, though, making it interesting. Struggling. Yeah. Good thing we didn't see Savage have to be trapped in that bear hug for too long. Pretty methodical here by Akeem. Back to the bear hug. So this could be, this could take a while. Crowd is rallying a little bit. Crowd looks to be mostly older fans, not too many kids. And this is from France, of course, and recently on the Pro Wrestling Only message board and other sort of niche wrestling fan places of where they get together and share information. There has been a huge amount, almost around 200 hours of footage of French wrestling from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Their own native promotion or promotions. I don't know if it was just one or multiple. And it's quite interesting because you're seeing a bunch of wrestlers that people have just only heard of before and not seen actual footage of. There's others that you see them when they're much younger than you would see them later in different promotions. And one wrestler that's featured in the 50s French footage that has surfaced recently is a young Al Hayes, the future Lord Alfred Hayes. And he was a wrestler for decades, but wrestled in Europe and some of the southern territories in the States. There's hardly anything out there of him as a wrestler, or had been until this French footage is out there, but there's several matches with him involved, like full 20, 30 minute long matches from the 50s. And that's something I plan on digging into and checking out. and just the French footage in general. I think it's very interesting. I've watched little bits and pieces so far, and it's really fascinating into a whole new world that existed, of course, in the past, but was inaccessible until just recently. And the French had quite a long history of pro wrestling dating back into the 19th century. A long history all through the 20th century. And as far as I know, things started to decline for the native French promotions in the 1970s, and by the 80s, they were all but dead. And that's when the WWF came in and got on TV and hit it big, like they would do in England at the same time. And the English had a long history of wrestling, pro wrestling too, that petered out in the late 80s, right when the WWF first country. So we're getting quite a lengthy match here. Not a classic Randy Savage match so far. Akeem, yeah, he's got the size of the monster heel, and I love the cheesiness of the gimmick, but at the same time, the cheesiness of the gimmick kind of makes him hard to take serious as a really top-tier heel. And wow. So he just shoves the referee. Akeem just shoves the referee right out of the ring. Tim White is definitely justified in disqualifying him, and he does. So, very interesting that Savage can't even get a clean win over Akeem. I don't know. I guess the Akeem gimmick was relatively new, but this is in Europe. Nobody would have known about this in North America. Unless they had some long-term plans here to bring back this match for the next tour of Paris and some next tour of Europe and run a cage match or something between the two of them or whatever. Weird that Savage can only defeat Akeem by disqualification, and not the most satisfying of disqualification finishes either. And this was this the main event? They're showering the ring and the fans with confetti. Wow. But that's not unusual. A finish like that is not unusual for the WWF historically. Head-scratching finishes to major matches have been a common theme throughout the history of McMahon family promoting, especially, of course, during Vince Jr.'s long, long run as the promoter. So we're getting the full post-match fireworks and everything. Celebration in the ring. The fans giving Savage a standing ovation. But I would say that was not a very great match to book for your first ever main event in Paris. Or the finish, I should say, was not very great. So now we're on to October 24th, 1988. This is definitely Madison Square Garden. And I'm pretty sure I've seen this match before, because it's Randy Savage versus Andre the Giant. That was a program they went with basically after Savage was done with DiBiase. Then he moved on to Andre. And you can see how the heels were, you know, doing matches with DiBiase and rematches from WrestleMania 4 made total sense because of the finish of the main event of WrestleMania 4, where Hogan had to interfere and help Savage win the match. So DiBiase had a claim to being hadn't been defeated decisively by Savage, so you could run that all through the summer, and they did, and drew good crowds. And then, of course, you had Andre the Giant waiting in the wings, someone who, at this point, had only lost, on TV, or as far as the WWF was concerned, had only lost to Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3. I guess, I don't think he had had any other losses. He would have a bunch coming up in 1989 against the Ultimate Warrior, but at this point, Andre was still hugely protected. He was a legendary figure. So this is... Savage had some good opponents lined up from post-WrestleMania 4, which would be almost, you know, the opposite of what we would see a couple years later when they went with another non-Hogan run with the WWF title, and that was the Ultimate Warrior's run. And after WrestleMania 6, after Warrior defeated Hogan at WrestleMania 6, the Warrior, one of the things that people point to as why his reign wasn't very successful is that they hadn't built up a lot of heels ready to take on the Warrior post-WrestleMania 6. Whereas here in 1988, there was a lot of heels that were built up to take on Randy Savage, DiBiase, Andre. We just saw Akeem, which was no great shakes, but not too bad. Andre taking his time getting to the ring. Andre, of course, was pretty limited by this point. With several back issues and just the general decline of his health due to his condition. Agromegaly that, of course, made him grow at a much more unusual rate, and became much more bigger than a normal human being. But he was only around 41, 42 years old. He was my age, basically, at this point, Andre the Giant, but he didn't have too many years left in the ring. And like I was saying, by this point, he was pretty limited compared to 3-4 years before, where he could still go at a pretty decent pace when he had to. But that being said, the Andre that we're seeing right here, who had declined physically, was still capable of putting on some pretty good performances. He was smart. He knew how to, you know, get more with less. And he was still, like I said, he'd only, in WWF mythology, he'd only lost once. Still protected. And was still a huge star and still perceived as being one of the top stars in all of wrestling. And he could ride that reputation too to get him through matches. But yeah, lots of stalling here. I'm not sure what the problem is. We have Pat Patterson at ringside there in the blue blazer. Now, Finkel's going to tell us what's going on. Okay, so we're having a clarification here. Heenan and Elizabeth both have to remain seated in their respective corners for this match. I'm not sure why this had to be portrayed this way. You'd rarely ever see it. Rarely ever see them be so strict with rules like that for matches in the WWF. But I'm sure it's going to play into the finish or the story of the match, of course. So both Savage and Elizabeth seated. Not that Elizabeth would have been much of a threat to interfere or do anything to help Macho Man win the matches. That wasn't what she was known for. Huge headbutt from Andre right away. We have the unusual and downright bad commentary team of Rod Trongard and superstar Billy Graham for this. Trongard was from the AWA. He'd been a commentator there for many, many years. And I actually, when I was a kid, I liked him because I thought he had a great voice. And he does. He sounds like a sports commentator. And he's, you know, and he's had his moments in the AWA. And I don't hate him as much as some fans do. I know a lot of fans that have rewatched a lot of the AWA from the 80s are not big fans of Rod Trongard. But anyway, he came to the WWF basically as the AWA was circling the drain at this point, as did a lot of talent, both on camera and off camera from the AWA. And his partner, superstar Billy Graham, who I love as a, at least in the 70s, I love 70s superstar Billy Graham, and he was a great promo at his peak, but as a color commentator, he was always really, really bad. And yeah, Trongard just doesn't sound right. Every time I hear him, I just think of the AWA. I think he should be calling a match between like the Midnight Rockers and Buddy Rose and Doug Somers or something. Can see fans at ringside enjoying, looks to be, WWF ice cream bars, which was something that they produced at the time. But frustratingly, as a Canadian, or at least one growing up in Calgary, Canada, we could never get those. They never made it to stores in Canada, as far as I know. I remember always looking for them because I was aware they existed based on the ads in the magazines, and they would advertise them on TV too, but they weren't available in Canada. Typical for being a Canadian back in the old days, and even today in a lot of ways, that there's just certain things that are available in the States that aren't available in Canada, and it's always been something that's frustrated me. So Andre, like I said, limited, and he's working a very deliberate style. But with his size, he can get away with it by doing just, you know, the bare minimum. Even because it's Andre the Giant, you'd think that even though it's just the bare minimum for Andre, that's he doesn't have to do that much because he's so strong and so big that just doing a headbutt or a few select moves are enough to believably take down somebody like Randy Savage. So Andre's removed a turnbuckle pad already. Savage, here we go. I think this will just be a hope spot comeback. Andre's wobbly, though. Elbow smash to the head. Can he take the big man down? Still on his feet. Will he hit that exposed turnbuckle? Nope. Savage is going for the padded turnbuckle instead. And Andre's saying, no, boss. We're not gonna do that. Savage with jabs to the midsection. Big headbutt. See, that just ends any comeback right in its tracks. But Macho's still got some fire left in him. Andre still won't fall. Yes, and finally he does. But that spot was not exactly what Andre wanted to do. He wanted to do his patented get tied up in the top two rope spot, which he would do and had done for years and years in matches. And especially as a heel, he would love to do that spot, but he just didn't fall properly there. Oh, maybe they're trying to redo it. No. Andre's down. Surprised to see him go down so early, but Andre's not going to be going 20 minutes, that's for sure. And Macho crashes and burns there. Andre bails. Macho Man foolishly going for the elbow drop too early in the match. Big double axe handle. Crowd is red hot. And Andre is really making Savage look like $1 million here. Oh, see, now Bobby's already broken the rules. He's not even trying to. Oh, and we get a cheap DQ right away. Two matches in a row here with DQ finishes. This one they must have brought back the next month, I would assume. Ooh, Andre misses the big elbow. I mean, the fans are going crazy. They're not too disappointed by the finish. Of course, even at this point, like I mentioned in 1989, Andre would start doing jobs regularly to the Ultimate Warrior, but even here, September 1988, Andre wasn't going to drop a pinfall to even someone like the world champion, Randy Savage. Well, they must have had a rematch, but I can't remember. But I'm pretty sure Savage never pinned Andre. anywhere. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. They had a match on Saturday's Main Event around this time that maybe even had a similar finish. And that's it for today, folks. So next time we will be on to disc number 2. And let me just check ahead and see. Yes, and we'll also be into 1989 next time. So take care, everybody, and I'll see you then.